Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's Q&A with Layla. This is part two of our weekly discussion with Layla Mutin, who is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. She's a registered dietitian. She's also earned an advanced master's degree in the field of nutrition. And in this segment, we will answer several questions. But first, I've got one, which I got via Facebook. And it's from one of my Facebook friends who writes, Dear Dr. Hoffman, what is your opinion of injectable testosterone? And okay. So first of all, I mean, let's talk more broadly about testosterone for men. Actually, this is testosterone really received a setback recently because a panel of the Institute of Medicine rendered an opinion, which I very much disagree with. Which is pushback against the use of testosterone merely for anti-aging purposes for otherwise healthy men who are low in testosterone. And so what they're saying is that the risks outweigh the benefits. And we don't know enough about it. We need to do more research. And this is in particular in light of some research that suggests that administering testosterone to men can increase the risk of heart attacks and cardiovascular events. Now, I've gone over those studies, and the studies are limited, and they're few. And often these studies look at men who are pretty sick to begin with, and they also mix the use of natural testosterone with the use of injected testosterone. So when I prescribe testosterone for men in my practice at the Hoffman Center, we use bioidentical testosterone. We use it topically through the skin. We very carefully measure levels. We follow PSA to make sure that there's no problems with the prostate. Some men are under the care of a urologist, and they get frequent digital rectal exams to see if the prostate is changing and if it's, you know, smooth or whether it's enlarged or irregular. So they get a lot of careful scrutiny. Plus, the men who we see, we don't just give them testosterone. We give them a whole lifestyle program, diet modification, weight loss, exercise, the right kind of supplements. So our men do not get heart attacks. This is part of an overall lifestyle program. It may be that men who are fat, sedentary, eat a crappy diet, and they go to and there are actually places now that just basically dispense testosterone shots. That's their sole economic, that's their business plan, is that there are just places where you can go and get a testosterone prescription or you can get injections, and they don't take the time to adjust a man's whole lifestyle and head off cardiovascular disease. So it may be that under those circumstances, testosterone, which may have a slight blood thickening effect, may increase the risk of heart attacks. I really don't like the injections. I rarely give the injections. The injections are only necessary in men where it's very hard to raise testosterone through the use of transdermal or topical cream. I think that may be less than, certainly less than 5%, perhaps less than 2% of the men that we see require testosterone injections. And, testosterone injections, A, they're expensive. B, they use a synthetic form of testosterone instead of bioidentical testosterone. C, they can hurt. Because you get a shot in the butt, and it can stain your butt and form a lump and feel uncomfortable.
Ow.
And also, you get the shots every, week and a half or every couple of weeks, you get a peak and a trough. It goes up, and then it goes down. So, you don't get a regular steady state like you do with a topical application of the cream. And in addition, the shots tend to cause the blood counts to increase. And when the blood counts increase, it's sort of like you're going from a thin broth to thick pea soup. And that means, the more red blood cells, there's more likelihood that they will clot, and stick together because it's, thick blood, high blood counts result in thick blood, which can sludge. This almost never happens in the men that I give the topical testosterone to. We see the blood counts remain fine. They don't go through the roof, get high. And therefore, I think it's safe the way we're doing it. And the benefits are enormous. Not only is it going to make you sexier, I mean, that's just part of it. I think that's one of the ways that they pitch this is that, you want to be sexy gray fox. And the only more we're extending our view of sexuality to well into late lifespan. Fine. Okay. but it's also about prevention of diabetes, which is a major risk factor for cardiovascular disease. So, in effect, I think that many of these men, we're making them live longer. We're preventing diabetes. So, yeah. I don't like the injections. I like the topical. I don't know much about this gentleman's history, why they're taking injections as opposed to topical. I also don't like some of the commercial products. I like to make naturally compounded, bioidentical compounded testosterone. But I got to say, in this current atmosphere, I think a lot of doctors are going to be afraid now to prescribe testosterone. I'm already hearing ads on radio and TV. Did you take testosterone? Did you get a heart attack? You know, call, you know, 1-800 ambulance chasers and, you know, we'll sue the bastards for you. And I think that, a lot of doctors are just going to pull back. They're going to say, oh, no, you know, now I mean, this patient may need testosterone, but I'm not going to risk it because of now these new opinions and the medical legal environment that surrounds the use of testosterone replacement. And I think that's really to the detriment of, you know, literally millions of men. It's horrible.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Can we talk about some natural ways to boost testosterone?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let's talk.
I mean, first of all, a good lifestyle, getting plenty of sleep, eating a proper, good, unprocessed food diet, a good whole foods diet, getting rid of excess weight, especially around the belly,
right,
because belly fat cells will aromatize any existing testosterone,
right,
and aromatize it, turn it into estrogen. But there are two other things.
You know, let me just interrupt, because your body makes a fixed amount of testosterone, and if your gonads are making X amount of testosterone and you weigh 250 pounds and you lose 50 pounds, your gonads are still going to make the same amount of testosterone. Your gonads will only have to now supply testosterone to, 80% of your previous weight, and there'll be more testosterone to go around. That makes sense.
Right, right.
And that's one natural way to raise testosterone. You absolutely can raise testosterone that way. Yeah.
And two things that are a detriment for low testosterone levels is alcohol use, heavy drinking.
Yes.
And pot, going back to
our
pot-dependent.
Yep.
Question.
Yep.
That will kill testosterone.
Yep.
So, yeah. All right. So those would be the things to do.
It's not sexy.
No.
At all. And both conditions can result in a condition called gynecomastia or man boobs. Definitely not sexy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's too much estrogen in the body. So yeah, I mean, there are other. We can use sometimes a natural agent to prevent the aromatization. That is, what is the formula?
DIM. DIM is helpful.
DIM is helpful, right.
DIM is helpful for hormone-related weight. And, I imagine, just trying to think, maca may be helpful.
Right. There are all kinds of things that purport to be natural aphrodisiacs. I'm not sure if they really raise testosterone. There is some information that high doses of oral licorice do that, but if you take DGL, you're not getting that part of the licorice that lowers testosterone. But if you're taking lots and lots of licorice, it can lower testosterone.
Crysin is what I'm talking about.
Yes, crysin is a natural thing that reduces the conversion of testosterone to estrogen, so it's a natural aromatase inhibitor. And some bodybuilders actually take it for that purpose, but I think you can get some benefit in terms of naturally raising your testosterone that way. In my opinion, it doesn't work that significantly. I'd rather use testosterone in many cases, but, so that's the deal.
Okay. Our next question comes from Sean, who's a 32-year-old male with osteopenia. He's on Clomid for testosterone levels.
So he's had low testosterone. Yeah. By the way, that's another way you can raise testosterone, especially in younger men. Mm. Sometimes you don't want to give testosterone. You want to actually induce your own gonads to make testosterone.
Yeah.
Clomid is something that it's a signal from the pituitary to your gonads to make more testosterone. And it also is good in younger men because it doesn't cause infertility. taking outside testosterone, yeah. One thing you have to ask a man is, are you planning to have more kids? Because if you take outside testosterone, take it via injection around your body, it's a great birth control pill. So Clomid would be for younger men who have pituitary problems.
And he's on it because of fertility concerns.
Okay,
so
good.
He's a 32-year-old male, with osteopenia on Clomid and nature steroid for hypothyroidism.
Well, this guy's got some real endocrine problems. He's got the gonads. He's got the thyroid.
Yeah, he does. And he's wondering if Ostera is okay for him. He seems to think it's only for women.
No, it's not. It's definitely unisex. It has no hormones that, are female hormones. It has a hops extract.
It's hops.
Which is a great natural anti-inflammatory. And that's a unisex principle both in men and women. So definitely Ostera could be used. It has some vitamin D and some vitamin K in it, but the active ingredient is the hops, and then of course there's a whole arsenal of other things, osteosupport and vitamin K2.
Vitamin K.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And perhaps strontium if it's bad enough, but we'd have to see him and look at his test scores to see if he merits the use
of
strontium.
True.
But the Clomid should help. The Clomid should actually build his own testosterone levels. Wow. Interesting case.
Would you consider DHEA for this person?
Absolutely. Yeah, one thing that they may be overlooking. They are paying attention to his testosterone, but they may overlook his DHEA. And DHEA might be just as important for well-being and for bone. It isn't necessarily low, but it's worth checking because, the signals from the pituitary go out to all the organs, and he may be just what we call pan-hypopituitary, which means many of his glands are not functioning properly.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sean. Best of luck.
Yeah.
We have another, let me see here, I don't have a name here, but let me see. I'm a 61-year-old female and have osteoporosis in one hip. I am going to have a tooth implant in 1 month and wonder if strontium is contraindicated before having an implant.
Good question.
I've never taken strontium, but I've been considering taking it.
Yep.
Does it add risk for necrosis of the jaw like the bisphosphonates do?
Excellent question. And, she's referring to is a phenomenon that is very disconcerting, which is that it used to be thought very rare, but patients who took Fosamax, Boniva, Actinel, and now Reclast, we're at higher risk of this dental problem, which is a very serious and profound problem. It's actually destruction of the bone in the jaw, and it can be devastating. It's painful. It can result in the teeth falling out. There is no known treatment for it. And they thought, this is exceedingly rare. Well, recently a study done in Taiwan shows that 1 in 200 women who were taking these medications had this devastating side effect. So it's a real caution flag on the use of this category of medication. What makes it worse is if you traumatize the jaw. So we've actually had patients where I've warned them off of dental procedures. They, said, I'm going in for an implant. Do you see any problem with that? And I go, yeah, but you were just on Fosamax, that's not a good idea. Usually there's a washout period of, I would wait a couple of years after being on one of those medications. Now, when it comes to strontium, totally different mode of action. Strontium has a very different way of working than the bisphosphonate medications. Yes, it's a medication that can help bone, but it works in a completely different way. It is not contraindicated in dental surgery or in implantology. In fact, it might augment the benefits. It's actually something that
terrific.
Has been explored in bone repair, and you definitely want bone repair if you're going to drill deep into the jaw. So I actually see it as, if anything, a plus, certainly not likely to be a minus when it comes to an implant situation.
That should be protocol for dentists who do dental implants.
Yeah, I think they need to do more research on that, though. Some of the initial studies are encouraging in patients recovering from fractures that strontium actually may have a strengthening effect on bone. And I really, when I broke my bone, I broke my hip, I think it was 2006. I think that was just on the cusp of when we were beginning to explore the use of strontium. I did not use strontium, but I think if it were to happen to me again, knock wood, hopefully not. I would definitely consider strontium among the things to accelerate bone healing.
Okay.
We have time for another question. Do we have
okay.
any more?
Okay, this comes from Raphael from France.
Whoa.
Okay.
We had Germany, and now we have France.
Now we have France.
So we have like
Hello,
the,
Dr.
We have,
Hoffman.
We have the United Nations here today. The Security Council.
Hello, Dr. Hoffman. I was navigating the diet section of your website and now have some questions.
Okay.
Please get geeky if needed. I can keep up, says
Whoa.
Raphael.
Okay. Look, I love the proficiency of these people with the English language is amazing. Like, I love Europeans. They know like 3, 4, 5 different languages perfectly. It's great.
Yeah. He has three questions here regarding the diet. Question one, why do you specify lean meats? Mm-hmm. Number two, what is preferable about poultry and fish than your optimal meats? And number three, why are fruits limited to one a day when beans are unlimited?
Okay.
He's thinking about the total glucose load. And he says, I've started listening to your podcast radio shows, and I'm enjoying them very much.
That's really exciting to hear. So is his name Marcel? What was his name?
This is Raphael.
Oh, Raphael. Okay, I'm sorry.
Raphael.
Raphael, I have to say that you may have, you're such an astute reader that you may have uncovered a slight, shall we say, anachronism, if you know what that means. It's a word that means something that's perhaps a little obsolete in our recommendations on the salad and salmon diet. Because in the past, when that diet was formulated, which was in the 1990s, it was all about lean meat. We're coming to believe that even fatty meat may be okay. More and more we're coming to accept saturated fat. I think you'll agree, Layla. The problem, however, is that in conventional meats, fat is the repository for a lot of bad stuff. Omega-6 oils, toxins, antibiotic residues, drug residues, and environmental toxins. And so, therefore, we're sort of torn. I mean, if you're going to have grass-fed beef, and admittedly the meat quality I think in Europe is superior, then fatty cuts of meat and cheese, dairy products, would be advisable and fine. And in fact, studies show that they may exert protective effects against such conditions as diabetes, and do not contribute to cardiovascular risk. So I'm a little torn every time I review those recommendations. Maybe it's time to qualify that particular statement.
Well, just the grass-fed meat will normally contain less saturated fat anyway.
Yes.
As opposed to the factory farm. So there is still some, to say lean meat. We don't all have to eat short ribs.
Right.
And spare ribs.
If you want to get really geeky, okay, you ready, Raphael? We're going to get geeky. All right, not going to get freaky. We're going to get geeky. There's something called palmitto oleic acid, which is present in meat, present in dairy, and present to a high degree in macadamia nuts, which is the new buzzword in terms of cardiovascular protection and protection from inflammation and protection from metabolic syndrome. Studies now show that high levels of palmitto oleic acid are protective against all those conditions, protective against diabetes. And maybe why a recent study shows that high-fat dairy protects against diabetes. You saw the headlines a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what in the heck is going on? Fat is good for you in terms of diabetes? Well, it's rich in palmitto oleic acid and conjugated linoleic acid. And that may be a protective factor. We're actually going to begin to stock supplements that are rich in palmetto oleic acid. These are called omega-10 because palmetto oleic acid, we're going to get real geeky now. We know about omega-3s and omega-6s. Omega-3s are good. Omega-6s, not so good. Omega-7s, which include palmetto oleic acid, may be beneficial. By the way, omega-9s include olive oil.
Yes, monounsaturates. Yeah.
Monounsaturates like oleic acid. But omega-7s, palmetto oleic acid, that's maybe the new trend. And so the new product should be available soon on our website, drhoffman.com. It's called Omega-10, and it's made by Metagenics. It's omega-3 plus 7, so let's do the math. Last time I checked, 3 plus 7 is 10, so it's it's omega-10. And so that's going to really confuse people, but that it's got some omega-3 and it's got some omega-7. And for some people, that might be, especially metabolic syndrome patients, that might be a good compliment to the fish oil they're taking.
terrific.
So geeky enough for you? Now, you want to talk about beans a little bit, because I didn't really...
Why are fruits limited to one a day when beans are unlimited, and he's thinking about the glucose load? You know, the one thing about the salad and salmon diet, or really any diet can be modified based on the individual's biochemistries. So anybody who's administered the salad and salmon diet is going to be limited to one piece of fruit or so many beans or not. It could be inverse. It could be different. And that's really the truth of it. There is no such thing as one diet fits all. And salad and salmon diet is very easily modifiable.
Yeah, it's a template rather than a very strict prescription.
Yes,
can be modified. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I'm on a salad and salmon diet where I can actually handle more carbohydrates than some. I'm not in a Dr. Perlmutter's diet, ultra low carb diet, but you know, I certainly eat very low glycemic index carbs, and beans are an ideal low glycemic index carbs. If you're going to have carbs, beans is this really slow release form of carbohydrate.
They contain so much fiber. It really does make up for it.
Yeah. So I would
often go to beans before I even go to grains. So,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, we find a lot of patients fruit out. Many of our patients have high triglycerides. And you know, so this is a big loophole for a lot of people. They're told, you know, eat all these servings of fruits and vegetables. So they concentrate on fruit. And that provides them with a lot of calories, particularly fructose, which transfers into triglycerides, contributes to insulin resistance and fatty liver. And so, you know, that's why we're a little bit on the case with fruit. We would like to recommend berries. I always like to stock fresh berries so that I can have some fresh blueberries or raspberries, because the proanthocyanins are so beneficial for, particularly for brain.
Other low glycemic fruits: grapefruit, kiwi, plums, some cantaloupe. As long as you don't have candida, cantaloupe is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Green apple is often good. You know, it's best not to have bananas and grapes all the time. They're pretty high glycemic, but the fruits are good.
Good. Well,
rule of thumb always being to double the amount of vegetables you eat. So you know the amount of fruits. If you're having two or three fruits a day, the amount of vegetables should be double. Or say it another way, the amount of fruit intake should be half your vegetable intake.
Very good. So is that wonky enough for you, Raphael? I hope it is. So bonjour to Raphael. And it's time to. I think it's time to say au revoir. And auf Wiedersehen, and goodbye to our listeners for today, because we are running short on time for today's Q&A with Layla, but some excellent questions, and we're delighted to see that we've got a lot of dedicated followers across the globe through the miracle of, I have to thank Al Gore for this, the Internet, which provides us with the opportunity to disseminate information as never before. It's very exciting. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're part of the revolution. Get out there and share, because you are the barefoot doctors who are marching forward in a phalanx to revolutionize our healthcare system, hopefully with some of the intelligent medicine ideas that we share with you here. So thanks, Layla, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we'll be back next week for more of Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is Intelligent Medicine.